This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. In this very different episode, the guest is me, and I am interviewed by Leah White, who is a librarian at the Northbrook Public Library near Chicago. This episode came about due to the successful Kickstarter campaign, and this is one of the stretch goals, was that Leah would interview me for the show, and we accepted questions from contributors, and here's the result of that.
Leah White, and I am a reader services librarian at Northbrook Public Library in the suburbs of Chicago, and I am interviewing Steve Thomas at Steve Librarian, and also, as you know him, the host of this wonderful, awesome podcast, Circulating Ideas, because you guys got it together and made the Kickstarter go through. So, yay!
Yay.
We asked for people for questions, and thank you so much to everyone who submitted, and we're going to go ahead and get started, but I'm going to totally cheat and ask some of my own questions as well. So this is my own question. The first thing I want to know is how did it feel to see Wrigley Field for the first time?
It was fantastic. As a National League fan, I had no interest in the White Sox, who are playing in town. We're at the ALA conference doing this interview, and they were in town, so I was very upset when the Cubbies were out of town. But I did go spend a lot of money buying Cubbies merchandise anyway for my family. So it was exciting. I very much they're one of the other teams. I'm a Braves fan because I'm from Atlanta, but Cubbies are one of those other teams that are close to my heart. We had a great. Well, we had one of our great pitchers was Greg Maddux, who came from Chicago first. That's where he got famous, and then we had him and helped make us famous.
Well, that actually kind of answers one of our user-submitted questions from Emily Clasper, which is, the only question that matters in these parts is Mets or Yankees, but I think we know go Cubs and Braves.
Yes, the answer to that is neither. Because Yankees, because they're pure evil, and Mets, because they're a division rival. So,
sorry, Emily. Okay, I have another question. I'd like to know who some of your podcast idols are. This also leads to one of our questions from Tracy Carter, which is about what inspired you to start the podcast.
Well, I'm going to get my phone out so Leah can see that I'm not lying about what podcasts I actually listen to. My main podcast idol, I guess I can hold it, is what I started off with was Terry Gross on Fresh Air on NPR. That's what I was thinking of when I thought of this podcast in the first place. Is that why I wanted to do it? Because I was listening to her show and thinking I liked the one-on-one interview style. There's another one. His name is Dan Benjamin. He does a lot of tech podcasts. He runs a network called 5x5. It's all a bunch of techie kind of podcasts, and he did a show for a long time that was all just one-on-one interview with techie people, mostly Apple people, because I'm a big Apple nerd.
Yeah.
But so those are the two big ones, and so I just have tons of podcasts on here that I listen to regularly.
That's interesting you bring up Fresh Air, because Terry Gross actually interviews all of her people remotely too.
Yeah.
I mean, was there a conscious thought about that, that you were going to interview people who weren't necessarily geographically convenient?
It wasn't specifically what I wanted to do, but it was more just a realism that, I'm in Atlanta and there's only so many librarians in Atlanta. I mean, even if I mean, there's lots of great librarians around there, but I mean, I can't talk to everybody who I want to talk to. You know, a lot of it, I want to use the Movers and Shakers list as a good little screening tool to find people that I want to talk to. And I mean, there's librarians all over the place that I want to talk to and get the word about the passion that they have for the profession. I mean, we just got out of a session here at ALA about bringing your passion to your work. And my thought is, I do have a lot of passions about my just everyday job, but my biggest passion project is this show.
That's awesome.
Yes.
It shows. I mean, you can see it in that that's what makes it so great.
Did I answer that question?
Yeah,
I don't remember.
Yeah, so again, Tracy Carter, what my question is, what inspired you to start the podcast? And what technology did you start out with when making your first podcast?
Well, I mean, what inspired me was just that I listened to a lot of podcasts myself, like Fresh Air, and just one day it hit me that I would like to hear a show like this about librarians. And it's one of those things that if you have a really great idea and you find that nobody else is doing it, then it's sort of up to you to do it.
Yeah, to make it happen.
Yeah, for the old ALA think tank thing, make it happen.
So, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
So I just decided to, at first, and then sort of the circulating ideas name just kind of came to me, and then I looked around and nobody was using that, and so they came together. And my original thought was, okay, well, I got this good idea. I think it's a good idea, so let me find somebody to do it. Because somebody should do this who has, like, a professional voice to do this kind of thing. And it was my wife, actually, that just kind of said, well, you just do it.
Yeah, so, wife. Yes. Yeah.
So I just decided to start doing it, and Buffy Hamilton was a local librarian, so I asked her to do it first. I had originally thought first, at the time, Bobby Newman was also local, so I was going to ask her to do it, but the timing didn't work out. And so then I asked Buffy, and she said yes. And so I thought also that she's a nice big name in the library world, so that's a good way to kind of make a big splash at first, too.
Start out big.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And the technology end of that, that first episode, if you go back and listen to it, does not sound very good because it was just me in front of my iMac turning on the record button in GarageBand and recording. And so I had the volume up too loud. There's lots of reverb, so you can – so it does not sound very good, and – Buffy has agreed to come back on at some point so I can do a more professional sounding.
That's great. Yeah, that's
episode.
Good news.
So at the beginning it was all just my iMac plus the free little software that comes on iMacs, like the GarageBand and Skype. And I got a little, there's a $20 little add-on you can get for Skype to record calls coming off of it. And there are actually free options now that were not available then. So if anybody else wants to do that, there are free options for recording Skype calls now. But Skype itself does not allow you to record, so you have to buy, you have to get add-ons for that. And I use Internet Archive to store everything, so I didn't have to pay for hosting of the files. So that was good. And I was going to use WordPress to do the blog where I would post all the episodes. But it turns out if you own your own domain name and want to do whatever that's called.
Hosting?
No, just making it go to your address redirect. If you wanted to redirect to the right site when you do that, you have to pay a fee to redirect. So I went to Blogger, who does not charge you a fee to redirect. So the site doesn't look as good as I want it to even now, just because it's Blogger is pretty template oriented, so it doesn't, but it's mostly just there as a placeholder for people to go to get the episodes. So
especially like I just download, I mean, I get them straight to my iPhone,
right? Yeah, I think that's how most people do it. They just subscribe through iTunes or whatever other podcatcher thing that they've got. So I don't know that a lot of people go, I mean, there are a lot of people that go to the site, but I don't know how much people stay on the site and listen. They might just download the episode and go. The problem is that they don't provide, iTunes especially doesn't provide any stats to you, so I don't have any stats about how many people download through iTunes. So I don't really know, audience-wise, how many I've got. I mean, I know the RSS feed has about 200, last time I checked, which was months ago. People subscribe to it, so I know there's at least that many people listen, but I don't think that even includes iTunes, so I don't know for sure.
Oh, it's got to be more than that.
I would think so, because there were 113 people that, I think it was 113 was the final, they gave to the Kickstarter, so
okay.
I would assume they were all listeners, one of which was my mom, of course.
Go, Mom. So this one's from Jeffrey Davis. Why do you think there are so few library profession podcasts?
For one thing, I don't think podcasting is still a huge thing. I mean, it's still kind of getting out there. I think as data plans are getting cheaper and people can afford to stream things now and do things on their phones a lot more, it's becoming more popular as radio kind of dives down, then podcasting and internet radio kinds of things are coming up. So I think it'll become more popular is part of it. And then, I mean, there are some good ones out there. There's one, I mean, Maurice Coleman has T is for Training. That's a good one for if you do training in your library. That's a good one. There was a good one called Adventures in Library Instruction that was some academic librarians that actually I used to work with a couple of them. But it was all of those, they were all really tailored to a specific crowd. So there's not, I mean, there's This Week in Libraries, which is a more, it's a video. I think you were on.
Yeah, I was on that. Yeah, This Week in Libraries is pretty great, but it's all video based. Yeah.
Right. So it's sort of a podcast, but it's a video show, mm-hmm. and they're kind of doing the same thing that I'm doing in general, and they're more international because they're based out of.
I want to say
Denmark, but I'm not sure if that's right.
Yeah, they're in Delft, which I believe is in.
We're Americans. We don't know geography.
I always call them the Dutch librarians. They're wonderful. The Shinashis, they're great.
No, they're really great.
Yeah.
So they're doing the same kind of thing, but on a more international scale, and not just audio.
Okay, so we've got a lot of questions from Christy Chadwick. So let's dive right in. What stereotypical librarian minutiae do you participate in? Such as, do you have cats, sweater vests, too many books, those librarian vices, tote bags? We are at ALA. Yes. Tote bags are aplenty. So
I don't have a lot of tote bags. I always come back with. I have a lot of tote bags with me right now because they're the Kickstarter rewards for other people. So I'm trying to give those away. But
you're like the tote bag fairy.
Yes. Yeah. I don't collect tote bags. A lot of times, me and my wife will take the tote bags that I bring home from conferences a lot of times. And usually I don't go around to the, if I go around to the vendor booths and get things, I try not to get the tote bag even. I mean, I will take it if I need something to carry things around in, but I don't take them just on principle.
Yeah. Whenever my boyfriend goes to a conference, he brings back tote bags for me. So maybe this is a dude thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Because like I said, my wife ends up using it, and she made sure with the Kickstarter thing, she's like, you know, I didn't give any money to your Kickstarter because, you know, it's our shared money, so it doesn't really count. But I still want a tote bag, so you got to get me a tote bag.
Tote bags are important.
Yes, but no, we do. We have a cat. We just had a cat pass away. Sad face.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry.
But we have another cat, so we're a cat family, except now our kids want a dog, so I suppose we'll be a dog family.
Yeah, you
eventually
can do both.
Too. You can do both. Yes,
I've got both. It works.
Yes, but yeah. Cats are more our personality, but my wife as well. But
what's your cat's name?
Violet.
Oh, that's adorable. Oh, yay, cats!
And yeah, we do have tons of books.
Good.
Around the house.
Every librarian should have tons of books. I can go on record saying that. So what topic do you think hasn't been covered in the podcast that you think should be covered?
I just recently kind of started doing more like topic-based ones. I generally before was focusing just on individual people, but I have wanted to do some things. I keep thinking I want to do some really big ebook thing, but then I start hearing too much about ebooks and I get sick of hearing about ebooks and I don't want to research it more to do an episode.
Ebooks, so, necessary evil, yeah.
Right, so I mean, I may do that someday. I don't know. I usually think of it more in terms of guests. So I do have a really, 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 really long list of people that I want to have on the show. Mm-hmm. So I don't usually think of it in terms of topics necessarily, but yeah, I've got a huge list of people. Yes.
Well, her next question was, what topic will you never cover on the podcast? Or I don't want to say what's a person who you would never have on the podcast, because that seems rather pointed.
I will neither confirm or deny that there is a blacklist.
Yeah. So we maybe will gloss over that question.
There's no real blacklist.
Yeah. How much time does it take? So in 2 seconds, I can get access to your podcast, but I am assuming, I mean, how much per week are you dedicating to this podcast?
It's kind of on and off. I mean, a lot of the research comes just from being able to do professional reading. I mean, I can read, you know, Library Journal on my even just regular work time, and that counts as, you know, professional development for my work. And so then I'll read the Mover and Shaker issue, and so I can learn about them. And a lot of times it's just a name that pops up as somebody I want to talk to. And what I'll do is I'll go, it's helpful to me if they're active online, because that makes it easy to do their research. Yeah. That way I can just do it kind of at home if I'm sitting there watching TV, or if I feel it's relevant enough, I'll do it that's part of my regular job, because the podcast is not related to my regular job, so I try not to do too much on regular work time to do with it. But how many hours do I spend? It kind of depends on the guest, because, I mean, a lot of times it's somebody that I've already kept up with anyway, mm-hmm. so I'm already following their blog, but I'll go back through and mark things that I specifically want to ask them about, like if they wrote a post recently about that, or I'll follow their Twitter, or I'll follow Facebook, or something like that. So I try to do as much research as I can. If they have papers they've written that are able for me to find, like not in a locked away journal that I don't have a subscription to,
yeah.
but I can't read it. But I mean, just for the recording of the episode alone is about an hour usually.
And about post-production?
Post-production is probably at least, is a cup, 2-3 hours okay. minimum, because I listen to it back once to go through and cut out long pauses or too many ums or things like that. I don't cut them all out because I don't want it to sound too unnatural, but if it's long of like, too much of that just doesn't sound that great after a while.
Oh, man.
And I've actually gotten to the point where I can see in GarageBand, that's where I do the editing in the GarageBand still, but I can see like the waveform of what an looks like now. I know where it is, and I can just I can snip it out really quickly.
You're an hunter.
Yes.
Yes, that's amazing.
But yeah, so I go through the episode once and do all that, and then I go through the episode again to listen to it again. So I listen to it at least twice before it gets posted, and that's. But it takes me, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's at least 3 hours for an hour-long episode.
Okay.
Sometimes I've had longer episodes that take, obviously, just longer, depending on how long it is.
And the last question from Christy is, what exactly do you do for your day job?
Well, I work at Gwinnett County Public Library, which is outside Atlanta. It's a suburban library system. I'm just an assistant branch manager. So I just manage day-to-day kind of stuff at the branch, schedules and things like that, and supervise staff, all kinds of...
You're making that sound so easy, and I know it isn't.
No, it's not. And, you know, I mean, there's lots of stuff to do, and, I mean, we organize outreach to the schools and to the community and things like that. And
So you make the library work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My branch.
No big thing. Yeah. No big thing.
So that my boss, my branch manager, can take her time doing other higher-end stuff usually.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Andrew Shupping?
I'm not sure.
I'm so sorry, Andrew. So Andrew asked, this is going to be cut out. Hold on. Oh, so Andrew asks, how long do you want to continue to do this podcast?
Indefinite, I guess. I don't have an end point in mind.
Forever.
Yeah, no, I have no end point in mind.
And what's the thing you want everyone to know about you that they don't know? That's a rather personal question, Andrew.
Yeah. Well, I think the couple questions back was one of those that I don't usually talk about where I work, so there's one that somebody and most people don't know about, and that's more just of a, because it doesn't have anything to do with my work, mm-hmm. the podcast, that I try to keep a just distance there, the professional distance mm-hmm. there. That so I mean, like I don't work on work time and something.
Yeah.
I just try to keep a distance from that. I mean, I don't specifically. I mean, they know everything that I do. I mean, I mm-hmm. update them and say, like when I did the Kickstarter, I said I'm doing a Kickstarter. My name is going to be out there, so I just want you to know that I'm doing this, and it's a library-related thing, so it's related mm-hmm. to libraries. But no, it's not going to disrupt my work in any way. But yeah, I don't know that there's any other secrets.
He really wants to know about your secrets, because the last question from him is, "What's one secret you're willing to reveal live?" This is like truth or dare. Yeah.
It's one secret.
Well, the cat was a secret.
Yeah, there you go. No, my cat. A secret.
What's your here? I'll get. This isn't a secret, but what's your favorite book?
For the longest time.
Oh, it was Ender's Game.
I was going to say you're going to get all upset.
No, it's okay.
That was it for the longest time, and I still have that little place in my heart that I can't let it go completely. But no, it has been tarnished, and I'm trying to think. I don't know that anything has jumped into it. So I don't really have a good set answer anymore, because that was the answer for the longest time. But, yeah. Oh,
that's heartbreaking.
Due to certain things that we won't discuss.
Yeah. I'm actually working on a list of books right now for my blog called Alternatives to Ender's Game. And it breaks my heart a little because I also loved the book. Mm-hmm. But now I'm trying to find things that I love in other books that I can also suggest to patrons. And it's tough.
I guess I'll say Old Man's War, I guess, by Scalzi. That's one of my favorites. He's
number one on my list, yeah.
I mean, he's probably my favorite author at the moment.
Apparently, he spoke at the Movers and Shakers reception, which I had to leave early and missed his talk. Oh. But he gave this talk about libraries where he cried. And everyone in the audience cried. So now we can love John Scalzi even more.
Yeah, so we'll put Old Man's War in that slot for now.
So Daniel says, why did you decide to join the library world?
Well, I don't have a really good, exciting answer for that one. It's basically, I was working in bookstores. And
oh, yay!
Yes.
What bookstore did you work at?
Several. I started in a little independent store down in Sarasota, Florida, and then I moved and I worked for Books A Million in Florida, where I met my wife, because she was working there too, and she always likes to say you can find anything at a bookstore, including a husband. That's her joke.
And then
when I moved up, and she went to graduate school in Atlanta, so then I moved up here after we got engaged and married. So when I moved up there, I just got a job at whatever the Barnes & Noble mall store used to be called.
Oh,
B. Dalton.
Oh, yeah.
So I worked at that for a little bit, and then they closed that. Then Barnes & Noble closed that entire part of their company, mm-hmm. So that store obviously closed. And I worked at a Barnes & Noble for a little bit. And then I wasn't making tons of money because that's a retail job. And my wife said, hey, at my school where I work at Emory University, where she's going to grad school, there's an opening in the library if you want to come do for that. And it pays a lot more than what you get right now. And it was just a stacks person goes, shelves books. And one of my main parts of my job was to shift the collection because they were, you know, make room for all this new stuff around.
Yep.
So that was my
job. I had a very similar first job. I was a professional shelf reader in my first, very first gig. It was horrible. You got to do it.
Yeah. No. And so I did that for, how long did I do that? I got that job in 99, I guess. And then for a couple years, or 2000 maybe. Must have been, I don't know. No, it was 2000 because I got the job in like April, and then I got married May that same year. So I had to get the job, and then I had to say, oh, by the way, I can work for 3 weeks, and then I need to take 2 weeks off for my wedding and honeymoon. So I hope that's okay.
That's awesome.
And so I moved from there into, still at Emory. They were very encouraging for us to go to library school. And so I went to library school while I was there, and they actually, I'm not going to say it was created for me, but it was conveniently created. They made a new position up that was half-time in reference and half-time in the serials cataloging department. So I got to learn lots of different parts of libraries. So I got to work on the reference desk, and I got to learn how to catalog serials.
Oh,
and so I was learning all kinds of the backroom stuff, the tech services stuff, and the forward patron-facing part of it. So that was a really good experience for me.
That all kind of leads to your position now, though, because now you kind of manage all these operations, mm-hmm. and you got to work in all those little, you know, all those positions.
Right. And then after I graduated, so that was not a professional position. That was still a mm-hmm. paraprofessional position. So that was, I did that while I was in school. And then when I graduated, I went to another school and worked for a little while. And I eventually realized, we're not going to talk about the experience of that school, I eventually realized that I didn't really like working in college.
Andrew, that was the secret.
That's the secret, but I'm not going to reveal on here. Come have a drink with me and I'll tell you that story. I realized I very much enjoyed working at Emory, the school I worked at before, but I didn't really like working in academic libraries. No offense, academic librarians.
No, I went through something very similar.
And so I went out when I was in the job market again. I was like, well, let me go apply. The public library had a job opening, and I thought, well, in my local community. So I was already driving. We didn't live anywhere near any college that I ever worked at. We didn't live anywhere near it. But our local, or the county where we live, had a job opening in the public library, and I thought, just like, well, let me apply for that and see what it was. And what it really came to me, that I hadn't really thought of it clearly, probably until the interview, I think, is when it actually came to me, of when they actually asked, you know, kind of at the end, why do you want this job? Because I was a little concerned. I was like, you know, I only have academic library experience. Are they going to hire an academic librarian for a public librarian job? But it kind of came to me that the public library was a good intersection. That was the story that I wrote for you when we first met.
Yeah.
This story is probably familiar to you. That it was really it's an intersection between the bookstore work and the academic library work. That this was public library is that. So I'm serving the my local community more. I mean, no offense against helping students at a college. I mean, that's a special mission in itself. But this is helping my local community. It's where I live. It's helping my community do this. And now, even at my current branch, I'm actually in, like, my daughter's school is half a mile up from the branch where I'm at. So it's really nice that
that's so awesome.
Right where I love being at the current branch where I'm at.
Yeah.
I love the whole system, but it's really nice to be right where she is so I can go over and have lunch with her. She's in kindergarten.
Yeah. And Intersection was on Young Librarian series.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that. That was awesome.
And that's how Leah and I met. So.
Yeah, that's the background. And that website is still active now.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you can go Google that.
Yeah.
Young Librarians, probably my name, and I think that one will probably come up.
Pops up. Yeah. Awesome.
So that's how I kind of saw the public library. Then that was sort of my intersection of what I liked. I mean, because I did miss the bookstore world. Because there were parts of it that I really liked. I mean, I liked working with people individually and finding the books that they want.
Yeah.
At a bookstore, it's to find what they want so you can sell it to them. But at the library, it's just to provide it to them. So it's a much nice community feeling.
It is, yeah. So those are all of our questions from the contributors.
Okay.
And my last question, and I swear I'm not trying to get you to say me, is do you have any favorite interviews that you've done so far?
You.
Yes. I win. No, for real. What are some of the interviews that have really stood out to you, or that you feel like have had some good feedback? And what are some of the interviews that we can look forward to seeing in like the next year?
Well, some of the best ones. I'll say Buffy number one, because because she agreed to do the first one, so that was obviously a big help. But it also helped set the tone of it, because I really wasn't sure how I was going to really do it. I was thinking more along the lines of a lot more structured than it actually is. I was thinking, you know, I'll write all the questions out. I'll just read the questions, and then they'll answer the question. I'll move to the next question, and we'll go on to that. But I liked, because she's so nice and engaging, that it really turned into more conversational thing, and that's what I like about it more. And so what... Nobody asked about this, but I'll just tell it.
Yeah.
The way I do it now is I just kind of make a Google Doc of notes. And so sometimes if it's a difficult thing I'm trying to ask, I'll write out a question that I want to ask specifically. But usually it's just like notes, like just...
Like bullet points?
Yeah, just bullet points,
yeah.
Topics.
That's what Mark Maron does for the WTF podcast,
mm-hmm.
too.
So I just do that, and then I just kind of read off that, and it's not in any specific order. I mean, it's in an order on there that I think might make sense, jumping from topic to topic. But if they start talking about something else that's related to another thing that I had down at the bottom, I'll start talking about that. And I mean, I'll just move it around on the page while I'm talking to them.
Does anything like ever pop up that what catches you unprepared? Does anything, or do you just try to kind of roll with the punches, so to speak? Or
yeah, I just try to roll with it. And if it's something that they're really they get into that I hadn't really asked about, and they get into it, but it sounds like a good topic, I'll usually even just type a note for myself real quick, because while I'm talking to people, I mute my end so they can't hear anything, if they can't hear me sipping my water or typing or whatever. So I'll just type the notes up real quick of what, like, next question, make sure to ask about this, and so they can get that too. That got really off topic though. So that was from Buffy, but that's what helped, because like for her, I had a bunch of questions all written out, but it ended up it ended up going where we were. We kind of jumped around a lot more than I had intended. So, but I ended up liking that, and so that worked out. And then, actually, the next episode, I talked to the Unshelved guys after that, and they were so used to bantering back and forth that I could barely keep up with them. So.
That's awesome.
But that also helped too, because it made it more loose and
set the tone,
kind of. Right. So those early ones were setting the tone. I'm very happy whenever David Lankus will come on, because professional
hero. We love
you,
David.
Yes. So I was very happy when he first came on, and he's come on. He came on again to talk about his second book. He came on to talk about the MLS as a degree in general, which has tied Leah as the... Oh, no, this is bringing you to 4 appearances.
Yes, take that. Excellent.
Yeah. Besides that...
So what are some of the people we can look forward to seeing?
Michael Stevens has been he's been on the list for a long time. I just never...
Yeah.
The way I choose a guest is usually... Right, he's mm-hmm. busy whenever I've tried to do it. I tried to get him on that one where I talked about the MLS too, but he was off on a conference or something too.
Yeah.
So he's been on my list for a long time.
He was my mentor.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Tell him hi.
I believe the Young Librarian series was hosted on his.
He hosted the Young Librarian series. He helped me kind of form that idea into a tangible reality, because mm-hmm. I sent him this really long, rambling email that was like, I'm inspired, and he was like, okay, let's focus. So he's great. I'm excited for that, too.
And who else? I want Jenny Levine on, but I've talked to other people. They're like, she's hard to pin down. She doesn't want to do it.
Oh, she's awesome.
Yeah, no, she's awesome, but she like doesn't like to talk about her stuff, I guess. So
oh,
it's
she's
more,
modest.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So we'll see. We've had conversations, so that might happen sometime.
Just go talk to her and just hide a recorder.
Yeah. Just have a nice conversation.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I recorded this. Bye. Meredith Farkas. She was on an episode recently that Kate Sheehan guest hosted for me when I was doing the Kickstarter. I had a couple people come do guest hosting episodes for me, and that was very helpful to give me time off to work on the Kickstarter, because that was very time consuming. But I would like Meredith to come on. Actually, I would like everybody on those episodes to come on to do their own episode. But Meredith is somebody like Michael who's been on the list since I made the list originally way back when. So
yeah. Let's talk briefly before before we end about the experience of the Kickstarter. So something I noticed after the Kickstarter is you were almost apologetic about how little, or I guess not about how little the money was, but about what you could get with the money that was raised because of fees or taxes. That's could you idea. Talk a little bit about what that experience was like? Did it meet your expectations? Would you use Kickstarter again? Just for other people, especially other libraries that I think are looking at it as a fundraising resource, mm-hmm. What was your experience like?
Yeah, I mean, it was overall a positive experience, and you can go on now. Jason Griffey is doing one for his Library Box project, so you can go, if this episode comes out in time,
yeah.
You can go back his project as well. Yeah, I mean, I would use it again if I had a good, because you really need to have a really solid idea and a really solid product that you're trying to do. And so I don't know what I would do exactly to do a Kickstarter again. But if I came up with a good... Because I've upgraded all my equipment now. So it's like, well, I guess once this becomes obsolete, I can upgrade again someday. But I don't want to just say, well, everybody give me money for no reason.
Yeah.
But it was overall a good experience. I mean, there's other crowdsourcing sites like Indiegogo that they do take a little bit less of a cut. I mean, Kickstarter, it's not a huge... cut, but you have to cut them in, and then Amazon processes the payment, so they take a cut, mm-hmm. and then it's hard because you have to pay taxes on it, like as if it's income. It's basically estimated taxes at this point. So I just kind of had to figure out. Well, I guess I raised almost $3,000, so I just had to kind of figure out. So if I got paid $3,000 more, how much would I? I looked at some tax tables and figured it out, and I think I figured it out right. I was very conservative with my estimate to make sure I had enough, and I figure if it's less than that, then I'll buy something else for the podcast with the money at that point. But it was overall a good experience. I mean, that was a little disappointing when you kind of get the spreadsheet up and minus all that stuff out. It's like, oh, well, I don't have quite as much as to spend as I wanted. Because not only that, but when you're buying, like for all the rewards people could get, the t-shirts, all that kind of stuff, you have to pay for that, and you have to subtract all that out to pay for all that, and then I had to think, everybody that I don't see at ALA, I have to ship it to them, so I have to pay to ship it to them. So once you just start Xing all that stuff out, then you only have so much money to actually spend. I mean, I got everything that I wanted out of the Kickstarter, so I mean, I actually ended up planning pretty well, I think, because I got basically everything that I wanted.
Awesome.
So I had some of the costs were a little more than I thought, but I had given myself some wiggle room, and I actually raised more, a little more. Well, I raised a lot more than I thought I was going to, because I was not expecting to raise. I thought I would eventually, it was a $2,000 goal, I thought I would eventually get that.
Yeah.
But it was like in the first couple of days, I think, that it got up there. And so I was surprised at how quickly it did that.
I mean, it was so exciting to watch. It like wildfire. It was really fun.
And then on Kickstarter, you can see they have a little graph that shows you, so you can kind of see how it's going up. And then after it got to the goal, and that's just normal with Kickstarter, that it plateaus a little bit. And then so at a certain point, you get that initial surge, and then you kind of plateau. But it's kept going up, you know, a little bit here and there if somebody would make a donation. And I raised another 1,000 past the initial goal. So, yeah, no, I was pleased with it, and I was pleased with the response I got, because I've, again, with the stats being so shaky, I'm not ever really sure. I know there are people who listen to it, but then it's like, well, do I have enough people listening to it, or who are passionate enough about it that they'll actually give me money to do it? Because it's like the whole thing with the internet is that everything's free, so I don't have to do anything. So, but no, everybody was very nice and
it's funny. Supportive. I feel like there's actually this shift right now of people who, and it's almost, I feel like, an anti-corporate kind of movement where we do want to pay people for what they're doing so well on sometimes very small scales. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's a part of like the maker movement and the DIY movement. Like it's all just kind of this feeling that, you know, these people deserve to be rewarded for that blog that I read every day, or that podcast that we all know that you spend a ton of time on that we all really appreciate. So thank you. On behalf of your listeners, you're the bomb. We love you, Steve. Thank you for creating the podcast, and we're really excited about the Kickstarter going through.
Thank you very much.
If you'd like to learn more about the podcast, you can visit circulatingideas.com. Or you can follow the show on Twitter at CircIdeas or on Tumblr at circulatingideas.tumblr.com. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/circulatingideas. And if you have comments, questions, or suggestions for future interviews, you can contact the show at circulatingideas.mail@gmail.com. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time.
That's it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.